afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and my co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, June 7th, 2022. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, hello, Melody, and happy World Caring Day.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. I'd rather have it be Donut Day.
Well, something close. It's also National Chocolate Ice Cream Day. So
I'll take it.
There you go. Well, combine the two, and caring a whole lot about chocolate ice cream today, you know, Turkey Hill, Rocky Road to be specific, I think that's a good day. Anyway, there's certainly far more important things to care about these days, but I confess that chocolate ice cream is the only thing I have energy for at the moment.
Even as a little child, chocolate was always my favorite.
Mm.
Just, yeah, it's just always my favorite, chocolate ice cream.
Living up in the shadow of Hershey.
Yes, but then as you get older, you kind of like, I'll take any kind of ice cream.
Oh, there you go. That's right.
But anyway, and I'll take any increase in gold. I'll take that also. And we had that today, up $12.40 in the New York spot price aftermarket, 1854. Silver's up 20 cents at 22.34. Platinum was down $2 at 1,023, and palladium followed suit. Platinum down 26, though, at 2,075. The USDX today, I imagine, was a little bit lower. Yes, it was 0.10, not by much, 102.30. And I'll give the crude prices once I get through to the paper markets. And we had the Dow gained more than 250 points, 264 to be exact. Bond yields fell, and 33,180. S&P 39.18 to the upside, 4,160. And the NASDAQ was up 113 at 12,175. Asian markets, Nikkei and both Shanghai stronger, just barely, but made them in the green territory. All of Europe was red, deep, deep red. Bonds, let's see what that 10-year yield did, was down 0.053 at 2.985. So it's getting close again to that 3%. And we have oil. Let's see, 119 for WTI. Brent was 120. Natural gas, 9.34. Well, I'm sure glad we're not in winter, because I heat with natural gas. So, not going to have that high bill this year, and perhaps next year. But anyway, we'll just have to buy some extra blankets, so, you know, and keep those prices down. And lots of things that you can do to stay warm, and you don't have to have it at 80 or in the wintertime, or even 70. You can even dip below to, 67. Some people go lower, some people go higher. But so there are things that we can do to keep those costs lower. We don't have to drive as much for gasoline. I guess when I traveled up to State College, I'll tell you the prices, most of them were, $5. We're very close to it at the gas station. So it baffles me that, because back in 2008, of course, there was other things going on that I think affected the psyche of the people out there. But when it got to $4, everybody just stopped driving, period. This time we're at $5, and it doesn't seem to have much of an impact. At least I haven't noticed. If there is, it's minimal. So how high does it have to go? Go to $6 before people really, truly start staying home? I don't know. But there are reports that it's already affecting the economy, and I'm sure in some ways it is. And the one way it's affecting the end, we're hearing these reports all the time. And You guys know I'm not a fan of the World Bank, but hey, they're downgrading the global outlook for the global economy. The World Bank is 189 country, supposedly an anti-poverty, but so often correct me if I'm wrong, but so many of these, all these anti-poverty agencies tend to create more poverty than what they fix. But anyway, they're just looking at the world to expand just 2.9%. Now, what's interesting, it was at 5.7% growth predicted last year. And from the 4.1%, it had forecasted for 2022. David Malpass, he's the president, he said that for many countries, recession will be hard to avoid. And folks, that's including the United States. They don't see a much better picture in 23 or 24, and they're only looking at a 3% growth for both years. And you know they always overpredict. They might adjust them downward, but they always overpredict. So I wouldn't doubt if they're predicting 3% for 2 years. You know, I'll guarantee you we might be heading into negative territory. But even Europe downgraded the growth. Was downgraded from them to 2.5% from 5.4% last year. And so kind of interesting, Dave. It's kind of it's the writing on the wall, I guess.
Well, it is. And your allusion to a recession in the U.S. is spot on. According to the Atlanta Fed's GDP Now tracker, which in late breaking news this afternoon shows that the second quarter GDP is right now looking to an annualized gain of just 0.9%. And after a 1.5% drop in the first quarter, the tracker is showing the economy doesn't have a whole lot more to go before it slides into what officially is considered a recession. It looks as though personal consumption expenditures, which we know is a measure of consumer spending that's responsible for about 70% of GDP, saw a cut of what, 0.7% from a previous estimate. So that is having a big impact. And of course, we'll learn more about second quarter GDP later next month. But you know, to bring this particular story full circle, we do know that Russia's invasion in February has severely disrupted global trade in energy and wheat in particular, and that's already battered economies around the world that had already been recovering or rebounding from the pandemic, although at much different paces, depending on who you talk to and who you're talking about. So anyway, you know, the bank expects oil prices to surge 42% this year, and for non-energy commodity prices to climb 18%. So things are keeping eyes wide open at the moment. And, you know, this more and more looking like a period of stagflation is on the way.
You know, what's interesting is you really don't hear any good stories out there at all. The only good story is, you know, basically it's not even true, us having the best economy. And, you know, I mean, it's just like they just repeat that and repeat that. And some people do believe it. No, we don't have the best economy that we've ever had for 50 years.
And that's why they keep repeating it, because they know eventually some people begin to believe it.
I know. And it's like, but other than the same ones repeating that, there's no good news out there as far as to show any support for anything other than a recession slash depression. And again, we have not felt, we're just now beginning to feel the issues of the shutdown. And then we're going to feel the issues of what's happening in Ukraine with the food and the oil. And this is just the beginning. It isn't the middle. It isn't the end. It's the beginning. And even if everything was cured, even if they stopped what was going on in Ukraine tomorrow, it still has a long way to play out. And these things just don't go away overnight. I mean, you're talking, Dave, it boggles the mind on how things can seem, and that's the word, seem to flow smoothly, when yet there is so much disruptions. And there's not an area that's healthy. And you would think that there would be bigger impacts. Now, $5 gasoline is a big impact for a lot of people, for all of us. I don't care where you're at. $5 is big. Diesel is even a bigger problem. But yet, Dave, it just seems everything goes along and it's just... I don't have an answer for that.
I've got a couple of solutions that I'll talk about or write about in Friday's blog that sort of compares today's experience with rising oil and gas pump prices with several decades ago, and some of the differences, and perhaps how we might, emphasis on might, be able to improve things a little bit. But be on the lookout for that on Friday.
Well, I can't, okay, will do.
A skeptic among us?
the extra oil from Saudis isn't going to do anything.
Yeah.
You know? And you know what? I have to hand it to I wasn't quite sure what it was all about, all the hoopla. And then I looked it up, and Tiger Woods turned down nearly $1 billion. He was offered $1 billion to join the Saudi-backed LIV tour, and he turned it down. And that's amazing.
Good for him.
Yes.
Not so good for Phil Mickelson.
Yeah, well, he went ahead and went with the money. Yeah, they went and they grabbed the money, right?
Yeah, well, he's we'll see what happens on a net basis. Certainly has been ostracized by his fellow PGA tour players in that association. But it, you know, when you're talking about multi-millionaires, it's often hard to be too sympathetic. But I mean, having turned down $1 billion, you gotta say, wow. Well, you know, good for
you. You gotta respect the guy.
Absolutely.
You know, and Mickelson, he once blasted the Saudis, I can't say the word on the air. He says, we know they killed Khashoggi and have a terrible record on human rights. They execute people over there for being gay. Knowing all this, why would I even consider it? Because this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to reshape how the PGA Tour operates. You know, they ought to kick them out right there. So, anyway, Tiger Woods, good for you. Good for you, standing up for your principles. But anyway, I'm just going to mention this briefly, then we can go on to the next one, because it'll get my dander up. So, but we do have Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, testifying before the Senate today and the House tomorrow, whether she's being asked about inflation, her one-time transitory inflation. And they're trying to see what all the rescue package has played in driving up these prices. And, you know, that isn't the only problem that's driving up inflation, but that's what they want to tie it to, Dave. And I still can't even imagine that she's the secretary, the Treasury secretary. Of course, I was shocked that she was actually the Federal Reserve chairman.
You know, I do wonder if her days are already numbered going into this testimony today and tomorrow. I think her job may be on the line this time around, but we of course shall see. Firing or asking for the resignation of such a high profile cabinet member, particularly as we get closer to elections in November, could be problematic from a political standpoint, but certainly from a governing standpoint, you just gotta ask, is this the best we can do?
Well, Dave, we can pretty much ask that everybody in there. Is that the best we can do of everyone in D.C.? But, you know, we have the fastest inflation in 40 years that's kind of squeezing on the retailers. We have earnings reports from Walmart, Target, Amazon this month all showed higher costs or hurting their operations. Profits for all companies in the S&P 500 index grew about 9% last quarter. Retailers' profits contracted more than 30% from a year ago. And, of course, they blamed the rising costs for raw materials, shipping, labor, and all that for the slump. I don't know why it would surprise investors. If they know what we know, they shouldn't be surprised by these weak results. But companies had already been raising prices on goods to offset these higher costs. And, of course, they have to always boost their profit margins. And the good old consumer out there does what he's supposed to do, spend.
As goes the consumer, so goes the economy.
Yes. And so goes our break. I hear the music. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter and the blog, and which comes out on Friday. Now, half of the people think that money affects their mental health. You know, boy, are we in trouble then. 42%, almost 50%, 42% of adults said that money has a negative impact on their mental health. Of those who said money affected their mental health, most cited feeling stressed, anxious, overwhelmed. And even just looking at their bank account is the trigger. While others noted that sometimes paying a bill or making a purchase or having to talk about money makes them anxious. So I'm assuming these are the people that don't have a lot of money or are the ones living paycheck to paycheck. I can't imagine, although I was reading that people that are making $250,000 are living paycheck to paycheck, which is really kind of hard to believe, but they probably have a lot more toys. 28% in the survey or the study said that those who said money was a negative impact on their mental health, they worry about it on a daily basis. No wonder we have so many problems in this country. And really what I think is that perhaps a lot of that is the fault that we had government officials that have allowed jobs to leave this country. People can't work. People don't have satisfying jobs. I mean, you know, not being able, you know, to put that bread on the table. You have to work two jobs or you can't find a full-time job. You're only working part-time and no health benefits and all this and all that. It kind of, it does get to you mentally. You don't have the pride and, you know, the better mental health that being successful has. So it's a sad.
It is.
Commentary.
And it goes to the heart of. Well, I think we're beyond the transition we started seeing in the 70s and 80s. Away from the essentially one, little more than one wage earner per household, with the other spouse, usually the mother, being at home watching, raising the children. Certainly not all families by any stretch. But I think as the manufacturing sector started to be impacted. Virtually all of that group of employees were what we now know as, you know, the middle class. And back in those days, I mean, 30, 40, 50 years ago, you know, you made it into the middle class. You essentially had it made. Your self-esteem was pretty decent. Didn't mean that there weren't always problems, because of course there were. We went to war. Thousands of our sons and daughters died. But, you know, just in terms of quality of life, overall quality of life now, you know, the demise of U.S. manufacturing, I think, has put undue pressure on American families. And it's never been the same, nor will it ever be again.
No, it won't. Those jobs are not coming back, and everything we see is decline as far as wages, inflation. I mean, these things just don't go away because they don't have the roots, and there's no one with the will to do it coming from D.C. So, you know, it really is sad, and so more and more people had to get on benefits, and you know, and it's just a sad. It truly is sad to see these changes, and to think that 28% of the population worry about money on a daily basis. And we wonder why all these bad things are happening. I'm not quite sure. The SEC chair Gensler, he made promises that he would address what he believes are deficiencies in our trading system. He actually, each fall, the Securities and Exchange Commission puts out a rule list, essentially a wish list of rule changes that they would implement. And Gensler's list includes 50 rule changes. And but you know what's funny, Dave? He can have 100, and it's not going to affect the manipulation and the rigging of these markets. But
right.
While the SEC has been silent so far on what they're proposing to do, industry participants have quietly been saying that he will likely use a speech at the Piper Sandler Global Exchange and Brokerage Conference tomorrow to mention some of his specific proposals. We'll have to see what he talks about.
Yeah.
Why do they keep it a secret?
Well, it's ironic in that, you know, the bulk of these changes are supposedly to make the system more transparent overall, and particularly more understandable by retail investors with a whole lot less experience. And you hit the nail right on the head. While, you know, hey, hats off, I guess, to some extent that, you know, they're bringing some of these ideas. I mean, the proof will be in the pudding when, you know, these proposed rules actually get enacted. But, again, as you said, Melody, I mean, improving transparency and efficiency in the markets is, you know, okay. But it doesn't do anything about the inequities that are just rampant and makes most U.S. financial markets nothing but tools for the rich.
Mm-hmm.
And most often at the expense of everyday Americans. So, hey, we shall see, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a rigged market. They're not going to change it, you know. And it's just a little more hot air. But hey, sometimes there might be a good rule or two, but they don't want transparency. They only give transparency to what they want you to see.
Yeah.
Everything else will still be the same. And I guess the administration is going to try to lift some tariffs on China. And this is from the Commerce Secretary. They're just looking at it. They're analyzing as to see whether they would do it or not. There are some products, household goods, bicycles, and so forth, and it may make sense to weigh lifting tariffs on those, she added, saying the administration had decided to keep some of the tariffs on steel and aluminum to protect U.S. workers in the steel industry. Biden said he's considering moving some of the tariffs imposed, hundreds of billions of dollars. They're considering, but Dave, I wouldn't think it was really going to do that much.
Well, I guess the proof will be in the pudding, but I got to believe this is almost grasping at straws, particularly if, you know, they end up, you know, being very selective about what tariffs they remove. I mean, just maybe shaving a tenth, two tenths, three tenths, even a half a percentage point maybe off of CPI when you're at 8.5.
Yeah.
Whereas others say, you know,
Merry Christmas.
12, 13%. Yeah. It's like, what have you done for me lately?
Yes.
So they're talking about, you know, this semiconductor chip shortage and passing the so-called CHIPS bill in Congress, you know, it's supposedly to provide more financial assistance incentives to ramp up the semiconductor manufacturing in the U.S.
Well, I don't know. It's I think the tariffs are on. They should stay on. You know, everybody's kind of gotten used to it, and I wouldn't be giving the Chinese any more, you know, bonuses or anything like that, and it's really not going to help us. But the we'll have to see what happens now that China's lockdowns are over. They were beginning to slow down, and it is amazing what they did to Shanghai.
There's this wonderful video I saw. I wish I could remember the source of it. I think it was a privately taken video. I don't know, Twitter, TikTok, who knows what social media outlet. But it was of this fairly large group, and talking about maybe 100 or so people in Beijing, who were, I guess, were coming out of their homes and or businesses and converging in this one square. It's like they were all jumping for joy. I mean, it was like a contrived commercial, but apparently it was spontaneous. It just reminded me of, I mean, 20 years ago, I was visiting a friend in Seattle. And they were just coming off of 1 month of everyday rain. And I happened to be in his radio studio when the sun came out, and we looked out his window, and all of a sudden, people from that high-rise office building were pouring into the courtyard and just looking up and worshiping the sun. It's that spontaneity is, I think, good for the soul.
Well, I'll tell you what, when China calls for a lockdown, you get locked down.
Indeed.
And if you didn't obey, and if you didn't get tested, and if you tested, you were dragged. I saw some propaganda videos that they produced, and, you know, making it like it was a good thing and so forth. But, you know, behind the scenes, it really wasn't that at all. And it's really shocking that many people can go in lockdown. You know, they all obey.
Literally ghost towns.
Yes. And we're talking, what, billions of people.
Oh, yeah, I mean, what's Shanghai, 27, 20-some million?
Yeah.
In that city alone.
Well, I said billions, millions.
Well, it is. I mean, over the whole the country.
Over the whole country. The whole country wasn't locked down, though, was it?
No, I believe so.
Yeah. So, anyway, it's they're going to be opening Beijing, the public transport and restaurant dining, and it's a positive sign. We'll see what happens with their tech stocks. Authorities are soon expected to end a year-long probe into the ride-hailing company Didi. The CSI 300, an index that's pegged to Chinese stock exchanges, that shed 15% this year. It did gain about 2% over the last couple of days, and it's up 4.4% since a week ago. So, we'll have to see if those people run out and if their inflation is going to be blamed for coming out of lockdown. Like, that's where ours was created, ladies and gentlemen. And you know I'm just kidding you.
Well, you know, the only thing I'd add is, you know, China is the world's second largest economy after us, and it's expected to account for almost 20% of global GDP this year, contribute more than a quarter, and it contributed more than a quarter of global economic growth last year. So, don't know what the individual numbers will be. Certainly not as nearly as good as they've been in the past.
Well, you know, Amazon, you know, it's one of the latest of the tech behemoths to split their stock, and it certainly gave it a knee-jerk bump yesterday. But the thing is, it doesn't really, not really. Amazon split means one of its shares now becomes 20, and the price of one share is lower. So if you think of a public company as a pizza, its shares are slices. A stock split is merely a way of cutting the same exact pizza into thinner slices. That's it. Nothing else changes. The size of the pie stays the same. The crust is no more crisp and delicious. The pepperoni no more salty. The cheese no cheesier. And once upon a time, stock splits were a way for companies with soaring share prices to make it easier for the investors to buy their stocks. Now, this was thought to be important for individual traders who sometimes didn't have the cash on hand to, you know, go out and buy 100 share lots. That was the standard unit of stock trading. And then during the tech stock boom of the late 90s, stock splits rose in popularity and were often associated with huge surges in share prices. But, you know, Dave, I think that's all ancient history. And if you can't afford to buy a whole share of, say, Amazon, which last week was trading at around $2,500, you could buy so-called fractional shares, which allow you to buy, you guessed it, a fraction of the share that you can afford. And, you know, it's just another way to manipulate. And I think it's really interesting. And I don't know if there's a way we can follow up on it, maybe with another example on Friday, on Thursday. But we're heading into a break, and we have to go.
We'd love to do that.
Yes, we'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of clients this final segment. You can reach her at 1-800-375-4188. Boy, the my intro intonations there remind me of a documentary I watched over the weekend about late comedian George Carlin, who back in the 70s and 80s in particular, when at least I was introduced to him and his style of humor, had this one character. Like the vintage AM radio guy, and I think his character was Biff Barf, a big sports guy. Biff Barf here for whatever radio station it is, and I call him the way I see him, and if I don't see him, I make him up. Well, we here at Financial Survival don't make it up. We try and tell it like it is. We don't know all the answers for sure. Certainly give you our opinions on what we think this information needs. And speaking of which, our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. I have an article about the winners and losers in Friday's latest jobs report. More warehouse workers, fewer waiters, more health store employees, fewer in public schools. Well, it looks like the overall job market is getting back to its pre-pandemic era, but it sure is looking a lot different. Disruptions over the last 2+ years have shaken up the composition of the labor force, with big implication for how industries will have to adjust to a longer-term worker shortfall. Economist Ellen Gask at PGIM Fixed Income says, I'm not looking for recovery to pre-pandemic levels in each industry. Some workers have left for green pastures, and that's a good thing. And she added, there's more opportunity for workers to return to new jobs where the industries are growing and the outlook is potentially brighter. That churning is what offers up a possibility of stronger productivity gains and increased standard of living, end quote. Courtney Brown and her Axios colleague Neil Irwin believe that the high-pressure job market may finally be starting to release a little of that steam. And that, they say, is the key takeaway from the latest government job numbers, showing an extremely steamy labor market that at the same time appears to be moving toward a less overheated state. The Labor Department reported Friday that employers added 390,000 jobs in May, the lowest job growth in a year. The headline unemployment rate was unchanged at 3.6%, holding close to what the government and its talking heads say is the lowest level seen in the past half century. I mean, that the more accurate figure is actually closer to twice that amount, that is, the U6 jobless rate, including discouraged workers, is 7.1%, about a tenth of a percentage point higher for the third straight month. And I guess that's beside the point. Now, other details suggest a job market that's starting to come into balance. The number of adults in the workforce, either working or looking for work, they say, rose by $330,000 last month. Wage growth, while still strong at 0.3% for the month, fell back from its recent highs. over the last year, average hourly earnings are up 5.2% compared to 5.5% in April. Policymakers at the Fed and in the White House want to see a labor market that's healthy overall, but one that cools from its hot potato levels earlier in the year, which, of course, tend to fuel higher inflation. President Biden wrote, I believe, last week in an op-ed, if average monthly job creation shifts in the next year from current levels of 500,000 to something closer to 150,000, it will be a sign that we are successfully moving into the next phase of recovery. This kind of job growth is consistent with a low unemployment rate in a healthy economy. Well, in that sense, the main numbers are what the president and his economists hope to see, a gradual slowdown in the late labor market without a sudden stop. Although I do note that implicit in his statement, his op-ed, is the notion that, well, we might be suffering from too much of a good thing. Can't have it both ways. Looking for full employment, supposedly, on the one hand, and then saying, well, 155,000 better than 390. D.C. policymakers are working on a difficult, nearly impossible task of trying to cool off inflation pressures without a recession. I don't think it's going to happen. That is, a recession will happen. But things apparently went according to plan last month anyway. They say with May's job gains, about 96% of jobs lost during the pandemic are now back. The private sector has recovered 99% of the jobs lost since the pandemic began. But the public sector has regained just 58%. One example of the big pothole that persists in certain areas of the economy. Other industries have recovered and then some. But here are the sectors that the BLS says have recovered the most and the least since February 2020. Transportation and warehousing sector. Think package couriers and truckers. With pandemic gains of 709,000 jobs, it's never made up a larger portion of all jobs, reflecting the historic consumer demand for goods. Professional and business services have regained the most since early 2020 with 812,000 jobs. Retail trade, 159,000. Financial activities, 79,000. Information, 64,000. And construction, 40,000 follow. Now, at the bottom of the jobs ladder are government, mainly state and local, but also federal, down 615,000 jobs. Education and health services down 340. Other services down 259. Mining and logging, 68. And wholesale trade and utilities down 25,000. Well, a collision of structural and cyclical forces, some already underway before the pandemic even hit, continues to push workers away from some jobs and toward others. That's according to the Burning Glass Institute. Among the changes the BGI point out are, one, remote work allure. You have economist Julia Pollack at ZipRecruiter who said people want to move out of in-person roles like leisure and hospitality or education and move toward the kind of occupations and industries with more flexibility for remote work. The other big change is the goods spending boom. When the pandemic struck, consumers who were stuck at home bought more goods than services. But economists expect employment in consumer goods to cool off as spending on services continues to bounce back. And last but not least, where the wages are has changed. Pollack noted private sector employers have an advantage in this environment. They can adjust their compensation plans and policies very quickly. The public sector has been slower to respond, one factor perhaps pushing these workers to other companies. So, as we prepare to head into another hot summer, America's labor market recovery has been just as toasty. The big question remains, which industries fully recover and which do not? Now, Senators Kirsten Gillibrand and Cynthia Lummis introduced the first major bipartisan legislation aimed at taming the wild, wild west crypto market that would classify digital assets as commodities like wheat or oil and would empower the Commodity Futures Trading Commission to rein the industry in. Gillibrand, a Democrat from New York, and Lummis, first-term Republican from Wyoming, said their proposal represents a critical first attempt to structure the markets for digital assets, and with long-awaited legal definitions. Their offices tout the bill as landmark bipartisan legislation that will create a complete regulatory framework for digital assets that encourages responsible financial innovation, flexibility, transparency, and robust consumer protections while integrating digital assets into existing law. That law will be a fun one to read, presumably with all of its esoteric technical components. Now, the cornerstone of the bill is how it defines the vast number of digital assets that are available to American investors and consumers. With few exceptions, the bill designates digital currencies as ancillary assets or intangible fungible assets that are offered or sold in tandem with the purchase and sale of a security. Those ancillary assets would be treated like commodities under federal law and fall under the jurisdiction of the CFTC. Gillibrand and Lummis said their proposed law treats all digital assets as ancillary, unless they actually behave like a security a corporation would issue to build capital. Oh, boy. Interesting development. Dan Kahan, a lawyer at King & Spalding, said that the legislation is likely a welcome development for investors who believe that the SEC's rules don't make much sense for decentralized digital tokens. He believes that the CFTC would be much more appropriate to focus on investor protection and anti-fraud and anti-market manipulation type issues rather than on those technical prescriptive elements of the current securities law regime. Oh, I'm not sure if that's New York speak, Washington speak, but it's speaking of another language. Now, last month, the Federal Reserve Bank in New York released its 2021 annual report from its markets group. That's the group that happens to operate a trading floor located close to the New York Stock Exchange. Well, it also operates another trading floor in the premises of the Chicago Fed, which isn't far from the futures exchanges in Chicago. The report showed that despite all of the recent talk about the Fed dramatically shrinking its balance sheet from its current size of nearly $9 trillion, the internal Fed plan for the balance sheet is actually this. I'm quoting here. After declining by about $2.5 trillion from the peak size reached in the first half of 2022, portfolio stops declining in mid-2025, at which point it is held constant at $5.9 trillion. So 8.9 to 5.9, looking $3 trillion. They're going to reduce. It's thereafter, however, projected to start growing again in line with GDP. So, the Fed was certainly able to get through World War I, the Great Depression, World War II, Vietnam War, the stagflation of the 70s, without such an explosion on its balance sheet. But since Ben Bernanke and Janet Yellen and now Jerome Powell have sat at the helm of the Fed, there's been unprecedented growth in the Fed's balance sheet. For example, Pam and Russ Martins at Wall Street on Parade say from June 60 to August 1990, the Fed's balance sheet increased from $53 billion to $309 billion, an increase of 483% in 30 years. During the tenures of Bernanke, Yellen, and Powell, the balance sheet has exploded from $880 billion in May 2008 to $8.9 trillion in May 2022. That's an increase of 911% in just 14 years. Fed Board of Governors has outsourced its open market operations to the New York Fed, which literally is owned by a handful of Wall Street banks. J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and the Bank of New York Mellon. Also, more importantly, Congress has failed to separate the giant federally insured banks from the Wall Street casino trading houses by restoring the Glass-Steagall Act. This lack of congressional action has led to the perpetual giant bailouts of too big to fail banks, which have exploded the Fed's balance sheet through so-called quantitative easing measures, also known as bailouts. Where we go, who knows? It ain't going to get better anytime soon. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. That's all the time we have for today's program. I'll return on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow on Wendy Wilson, Apothecary Herbs. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks, as always, to our fine producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye. If I got me a wealthy man.